And this is Rosari Griffin interviewing Dr. Ned Dwyer, a former colleague of mine at UCC. So you're very welcome to the show, Ned.
Thanks, Rosari. Good to be with you.
Yes, I believe you're out in Portugal as we speak.
Yes, myself and my wife Carmel Sharkey, we moved to Portugal at the beginning of 2015. So we've both been working down here just outside Lisbon since then.
And what's the situation in relation to COVID-19 in Portugal at the moment?
Well, Rosari, I think we're in a kind of a similar situation to Ireland. I was just kind of having a look there at the statistics earlier today, and there's about 22,000 confirmed cases and just over 800 deaths so far. So it's kind of on a par with Ireland, even though the population down here is about 10 million, so it's about twice that of Ireland.
Right.
But I'd have to say, I think the Portuguese government, they were quite quick out of the blocks with this. So already back on March 10th, they implemented social distancing and some of the early measures. Then they declared a state of emergency on the 18th of March, and basically we've been in lockdown since the 19th. And so we're encouraged to stay at home, go out only for exercise, to walk the dog, go to the supermarket and pharmacy, and that's about it. So
very similar to here.
More or less like in Ireland.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a 2 kilometre restriction or no?
No, we don't have that. So like... myself and Carmel, we're kind of runners, so we go for a run every morning, but we can kind of run as far as we like. What they have done is we're beside a large popular beach here, so that's been completely closed off, so nobody's allowed onto the beach or mm-hmm. anywhere near any of the bars and stuff that would have kind of run along the beach side.
Yeah.
And now over Easter, what they did was they restricted everybody to their basically kind of council area. And you weren't allowed to leave it. So that was basically to stop kind of people going to see their grannies or their other relatives and having Easter dinner together.
Right.
We were on a kind of a super lockdown over the Easter.
Mm-hmm. And how are you finding it?
Well, I suppose I've been kind of quite lucky since last year. I became a freelancer, so actually I've been working from home for over a year now. So for me, not a lot has changed, so because I was working from home anyway.
Right.
I suppose that the main thing is just not being able to kind of go where you want. It's basically from here, 300 metres to the supermarket and home again. That's kind of the extent of our travels other than the daily run. So personally, I haven't been finding it like so hard, but I mean, for most people, it's tough because... a bit like in Ireland, you know, everything is closed and people are trying to juggle jobs, juggle childcare, juggle all the other bits and pieces. So it's harsh, you know.
Yes.
But now we're looking towards May 3rd as the state of emergency will definitely be lifted. And then there will be some kind of exit, I suppose, out of this. Now, we don't know the exit strategy here yet, but again, I think it'd be like Ireland, you know, it'll be step by step with things opening up. But it's going to take a while.
Yes, it's quite a change and a drastic change for all of Europe, indeed all of the world, in such a short space of time. Ned, in relation to when you said you're a freelancer, what do you mean by that?
Basically, I suppose I'm a consultant. I work on various kind of projects. So my kind of background is working with satellite imagery for environmental analysis. So at the moment, I kind of collaborate with a few small startups or small companies, one based here in Portugal, another one in Spain, another one in France. And actually, I have some links back into UCC as well. I'm collaborating on a project with them in the geography department. And what we're looking at is vegetation or upland fires in Ireland. And I know you've had a few fires there in Wicklow and places recently. So what we're going to be doing is use satellite data to look at the extent of these fires, but also what are the emissions and the gases and the particles coming out of these fires, because we don't have them quantified very well.
Right.
So we'll be doing that project now over the next 2 years.
Very interesting. I once heard a Colombian, I think it was the Minister for Education or Science, Caesar, whose second name escapes me, but he originally worked with NATO or in the satellite place in Houston, and I think they used to use satellite imagery to look at the deforestation in around Colombia down along the Amazon, because you couldn't the patrolling police couldn't see the loggers, illegal logging from, you know, the waterways, but they could from satellite imagery, which was quite interesting to detect all the illegal activity going on there. So indeed, great use for satellite imagery.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Now, what I really wanted to talk to you about, and I know the Geography Department are also very involved in this area, but it's an area of interest to your own heart, is an NGO you're involved in called the Lisbon Project. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yes, I can. I did some volunteer work when I was in Ireland working with the Brighters community worldwide. And then when we came here to Lisbon, and especially last year I had a bit more time when I became freelance, I was looking at opportunities to do some volunteering here, and I came across the Lisbon Project, which was just set up about 2 years ago now. And basically what they do is they offer a hand of friendship to migrants and refugees who are coming here to Portugal to get started. Now, Portugal would have quite a few migrants coming from their kind of former Portuguese colonies like Angola, Mozambique, Guinea-Bissau, and obviously Brazil. But recently as well, there's people coming from South Asia, so there's quite a few Indians and Pakistanis and Nepalese and so on around. And of course, they have to go through kind of the
asylum process,
immigration authorities and that. But what the Lisbon Project is trying to do is, I suppose, put a humane face on their arrival in Portugal. So I would say first and foremost, it offers a hand of friendship. So we have a premises in downtown Lisbon, and it's a social space. So people can just drop in, have a cup of tea, they can play pool, they can meet other people there, and just have a space in which to, you know, relax and kind of meet other people that are in similar circumstances to themselves.
Mm.
But the Lisbon Project also offers a lot of kind of practical supports. So we do things like kind of mediation service, kind of getting people linked up with the public services they require, translating their documents for them. We offer language courses, so both English and Portuguese. And myself, I'm involved in the employment mentorship program. So basically that means helping people with getting their CVs up to speed, doing cover letters, preparing them for interviews, kind of pointing them at all the websites mm-hmm. that they need to look at to find jobs here in Portugal. We do house search with them, so that's to help them to find an accommodation
and to get it set up,
and all that kind of thing. Mm. So I've been helping them now the last 6 months on this, and it's great to meet kind of people of all sorts of backgrounds, and I mean, it's very inspiring, because most, I would say all the people kind of coming here, they're looking for a new opportunity, and a lot of them have a kind of good educational background, and those that don't as well are just keen to kind of get stuck in and get working and earning a living for themselves. So it's great to be involved with them.
Fantastic. That's great work. And well, I know Portugal has been on the front line again for the migrant crisis, because obviously it's based in the Mediterranean, and it's obviously easy access from North Africa or whatnot for migrants travelling over in boats and illegally or whatnot. But you said recently that given the COVID crisis and the issue about direct provision, that the Portuguese government took rather radical steps to start normalising the process for such refugees. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, of course, when refugees come here, they have to go through a process like in Ireland, asylum seekers. But then also just migrants, people who have come here for economic reasons and want to kind of make a start, they can apply to the immigration authorities to try and get residence, but that all takes time. And while they're waiting for that, usually they can't look for a job and so on, and it's quite tricky. But I think the Portuguese government showed great leadership right at the beginning of this crisis. Just as the state of emergency was imposed, they said that all migrants and all asylum seekers were being given temporary residence rights until at least July. So basically what that means from a practical sense is all these people can apply to the National Health Service and get a health number. They can apply for the supports under Social Security. They can actually apply for jobs and get a job if they're able to find one at the moment.
Mm.
But it just means that they can stop looking over their shoulder and basically take advantage of the state supports that are out there during this particularly kind of harrowing period.
Yes.
So I think it was amazing foresight and generosity of the Portuguese government to do that.
Would you imagine, and this is obviously would be one of the fears of the government, I'm not saying it's founded, but would you imagine that this would encourage more migrants to go to Portugal, given that they are given, I suppose, more easy access to, we'll say, the state provisions or...
I don't think so, because these provisions are just temporary, mm-hmm. while the state of emergency is sort of here. And basically, with travel around the globe restricted at the moment, there's very little movement of people. And I mean, this generous offer will basically come to an end. And it's only for people who actually have their paperwork kind of in the system already.
Okay.
So if you arrive in the morning, you've kind of missed the boat on this one, to say it. So you know, it's not going to, I think, have any effects like that. I think it's just a real kind of realization of the practical needs that are here at the moment.
Yes.
And in one sense, I would say the numbers in Portugal aren't huge. A bit like Ireland, we're on the far edge of Europe.
Yes.
So it's not like Greece and Italy and other countries who are facing large numbers, and it's a different scale of a problem. Portugal... I'd say has been managing much better from that point of view.
Mm-hmm. As you said, great foresight, and of course, it gives a nice silver lining for people who came in precarious circumstances to find themselves being a happy recipients of more stability, albeit in an uncertain future now for everybody. Finally, I suppose, Ned, what's the future hold for you? How are you and Carmel wed to living in Portugal?
Well, for the moment, we're definitely staying put. We enjoy it down here. Portugal is a very pleasant country to be based in, a nice climate, as you might imagine. But also, things work pretty well down here. People are very nice, very friendly, very helpful. And we've been here now just over 5 years, so I think we very much feel at home here. And as a freelancer, basically, I can work from wherever I can have internet access and a laptop.
Mm-hmm.
So being based here in Portugal is as good and better than many places. So I think we're not moving anywhere else soon. So although we get back to Ireland quite frequently and mm-hmm. obviously have friends and family there, so there is that strong connection. But certainly we're very happy down here in Portugal. And are staying put for the foreseeable future, let's say.
Well, it's not a bad choice of place given the lovely climate, as you said, and the wonderful culture and people that you're amongst. So, not a bad option at all. Now, unfortunately, Ned, we're at the end of our time for interviewing, but maybe in the future I'll have you on again because I'd like to explore more the work you have done with Mairi Institute in UCC to do with climate change, and the project you have there, and also your involvement with Brighter Communities Worldwide. But I think that'll have to be for another day. But for now, so thank you so much for coming on to speak, especially about the Lisbon project and life in Portugal. So thank you so much for your time, Ned.
A pleasure, Rosari, and a big hello to everybody that we know back around Cork and Youghal as well.
Thank you so much. Thank you. We'll pass on your good wishes, Rosari. Ned. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.
And there you are listening to Dr. Ned Dwyer, who is a former colleague in UCC and now a freelance consultant in Portugal, working on a variety of different climate-related issues. And there he was speaking about the Lisbon Project in relation to migrant and refugee status in Portugal as a result of the COVID-19 crisis. And again, this is something our own government can learn from and indeed should implement to sort of regularise the position of people stuck in a system such as direct provision, stuck there interminably. And now we'll take a commercial break.